We're diving into the future of chips because one man is redefining the game, Mitesh Agrawal, CEO of Positron. Isn't just making faster processors, he's rethinking the entire architecture, pushing AI, efficiency, and performance to levels the big players never saw coming. If you think the chip war is over, think again, because Positron is just getting started.
I want to welcome Mitesh Agrawal, CEO of Positron, talking about things all AI, so to speak. And first of all, welcome to Las Vegas. Are you enjoying yourself so far?
Yeah, thank you for having me here, Bruce. It's a pleasure and really looking forward to this chat. It's AI and technology nowadays, so we can go deep into that.
I think there are a lot of people that are curious about AI.
Yep.
And they understand kind of the general application, but there's an infrastructure issue.
Yeah.
And so in a nutshell, what is Positron?
Yeah, Positron exactly lives within the realm of that infrastructure. We are basically building custom silicon or chips as, you know, to really accelerate the applications that AI is bringing to us. You think about applications of AI, you think about ChatGPT, you think about email assistants, AI agents, image generation tools, all of this. And these are for today. It's going to go and expand even more. Positron is building very, very efficient chips, both from a cost performance and power performance, so utilizing less and less electricity, to really power these AI applications of today and tomorrow.
Well, you know, for laymen like myself, I'm always reading about NVIDIA, you know, and it just never ceases to amaze me that every quarter on quarter, year after year, they're doubling and then doubling and then doubling again. The demand for these chips are unbelievable.
Yeah.
Okay. But they have a virtual monopoly.
Yep.
How does Positron compete with not only that monopoly, but with the quality of a chip of NVIDIA? I mean, in essence, what makes you different?
Yeah. So you talk rightly about NVIDIA, one of the smartest and largest companies on the planet, right? But the system they have designed, the chip that they've designed, NVIDIA chips, they have to address 100 different problems, 100 different kind of applications. So it's what is called GPU, and it's more general purpose. Where we are seeing where the market is going is that as AI applications are increasing, a lot of spend is going into targeting these AI applications. So for example, just to give you numbers, NVIDIA's annual revenue is $200 billion on data center this year. In 2025, it's going to be that. For inference, which is what we are targeting, which is application-based AI, that's roughly $50 billion of that $200 billion is going towards that, right? But within these applications, there are all these different types of models. You know, people have heard of DeepSeek or ChatGPT or Grok with a K, you know, these kind of language models. And NVIDIA can run them, but they can't run it as efficiently, all of the applications, because they have to run 100 different applications too. When you're designing ASIC and custom silicon, you are saying that we're going to focus on this type of application and really going to make sure that all of the silicon, everything that is on a chip, all the transistors, all of the memory, all of the flops, all of the computing, it's focused towards running that very, very efficiently. So that's how we compete. We say that we're going after that one piece of the market of inference, roughly $50 billion of infrastructure spend this year on it. And we say that we're going to try and get or capture a percentage of it more and more and more of that. Obviously, you also asked, how do we compete with NVIDIA, which has tens of thousands of people and trillions of dollars of valuation?
I guess my question is, it's what you say is, how do you get customers to listen to you when they have such dominance in the marketplace?
Yeah, I think the two things that you do is, one, you listen to the customers and see what their workloads, how they're running them today. And today, like you mentioned, NVIDIA is a virtual monopoly, right? So you have to accept that that's the ecosystem that we are living in and that we are part of. And so you have to make our systems integrate into that ecosystem. You cannot make people change their code. You cannot make people change the way they run things, right? You have to comply and be part of that ecosystem. So that's one. Positron is the only ASIC company that has really made it such that you don't have to make any changes in any line of code to run your same application that you're running on NVIDIA to run on Positron. That's first. And obviously, the only way you can get a customer to be interested in you is if you show them better performance at a cheaper cost, at a cheaper usage of power. And if you show that, then they're going to be talking to you. They're going to be interested in you. We have customers in many, many different types of applications, whether it's gaming companies, media companies, cloud companies, who look at our product and say, yeah, I can drive performance optimization. I can drive efficiency, basically. I can get more for less for my particular application. And that's how you get them to start to talking with you. Then you test them and you kind of build from that, right? And that's the story there. That's how we build.
How's the reception been so far?
It's been really, really great. I think the main thing that ASIC companies have struggled, if you've seen in the past, is getting a customer. Like they have all said stories around how they're building a software first or things like this, and they really struggle to get a third party customer other than themselves deploying it in a cloud, right? So for us, I'm proud to say that we just did our first rack scale deployment, which is a production ready deployment at a customer. We're going to be announcing that customer story soon in a month or so. And we have other customers I mentioned in gaming companies, in content moderation area, where companies are looking at us and saying, yeah, this is really, really effective. And again, it's about look, we are grounded as a company, right? We take it step by step. I'm not sitting here and telling you that, oh, we're going to target all 200 billion of NVIDIA.
Sure.
I'm not even saying that in the first year, it's all about getting to 1% of it. It's like you take step by step and you eventually get to that percentage and you keep on growing into that market. Other parties' market is also growing rapidly. So you kind of expand in that ever-expanding market there.
You know, when I think about AI and the boom that's going on, mm-hmm. it almost creates a certain anxiety.
Yeah.
Because it's just growing so crazy. How does an individual like yourself who's running a company like this, or even a client or a customer, kind of sift through all that noise?
Yeah.
And because when you think about it, I would really like you to kind of address not only the marketplace of AI, and I think everyone understands that AI is exploding, but for my own ears, I would love to know when the internet took off, as a comparison.
Yeah.
I mean, what's the comparison to that? I mean, the adoption rate, I guess, is what I'm trying to say.
That's actually a really good point. And that, by the end of it, you will see like the pace is so much more different and so much more rapid than anything that we have experienced in any technology. But internet, as we all accept, has been the fastest growing technology in our lifetimes, right?
Correct.
And if you look at it, okay, you can say today that the world of AI has reached roughly 500 million people, because if you think about it, ChatGPT just announced that they have 400 million active users, monthly active users. You give it 100 million more people and you say you're roughly at 500 million people using AI at some part in their lives today, right? ChatGPT came out in November of 2022. We are in March of 2025 right now. That's 2.5 years roughly. So
we
took 2.5 years to reach 500 million. That is insane pace. Now compare that to internet. You asked me about comparison there.
Right.
Internet first came out in the world as a World Wide Web, which is basically becoming accessible to everyone in 1991. But even assuming that it really became popular, started to get really old in 1995 with Windows OS and everything coming through, it took until 2002 for internet to reach 500 million people. Wow. Today, internet is at 68% penetration in the world, so roughly 5 billion people. AI has at least that 10x growth more to go, and we're accelerating it 3 to 4x faster pace than what internet grew at. So we're talking about getting to 5 billion people in the next decade rather than in the next 3 decades, which is what internet took. Like internet's taken 3 decades to get to 5 billion people. So this is why when you hear great optimism from use case.
So the demand is just insatiable.
Yeah. That's what we all think. Like that's what, look, I know people talk about hype and bubble and
yeah.
Look,
there's that always, was going to be my next question.
There's always air pockets, right? Like you have to be humble enough to accept that, there's always push and pull, right? Like it's like.
And is that something that concerns you?
I think we obviously think about it, but as both you as an investor, long-term investor, right? And we are here to build a long-standing multi-decade company. We're not here for a quick rush here, right? Or anything like that, right? When we think about it, I think we let the macro worry about itself and sort it out. It's about building a great technology and having the longevity in the company built in, whether that's from how you think about cash flow, whether you think about technology, how future-proof it is. That's what we worry about from day to day. But yes, I think you are right that we talk about it. My background, I built Lambda there and it's now a multi-billion dollar company, has really nearly $500 million in revenue. We build that in a few years' time, right? Without a hype, kind of like on hype is a, for lack of a better word, but without that growth rate, you can't build a $500 million generating revenue company in that few short amount of time. So there is that worry, but I think, as I just mentioned, if you look at that, we have only reached 500 million people. Internet is to 5 billion people today. So there is potential to 10x from where we are today. And so if you think about demand from infrastructure, power, applications, what we will use it in our life, it's just going to keep on going up.
Am I thinking about this the wrong way? I think AI takes me to today, basically,
yeah, you know,
the information, but it still takes a human to interpret tomorrow.
A lot of it, yeah.
Right. So
there is no agentic authority of AI that can make a decision yet, you know.
At this moment,
exactly.
But I'm assuming that's fast possibly that becoming a reality.
Yeah, I mean, if you seen some of the applications that run in the background, basically that's not yet public from that perspective. There are applications where AI is surprising us with new molecule structures or new protein structures, for example.
Is that
now,
right?
Yeah, now that's an authority decision. Like that's a decision making. It still can't act on it, but where AI can't go when it predicts a structure, it can't still go and produce it yet. Like it can't go into manufacturing of it yet, right? But I think you will see, like, look, with any technology, there is always a hype that AGI is coming or anything like that. I don't know about AGI from that perspective because AGI's definition can differ. AGI basically means artificial general intelligence, right? Like, basically, can it do everything? That just depends on definition of everyone, how they perceive the world, what their job is, what everything is. But from the perspective of really, like, growing fast and how it's getting more and more of the things that we think about and taking chunks of that, you know, all the way from self-driving a little bit, like we used to drive everything. Now cars are assisting you in driving.
And robotics.
And robotics, exactly. I think that's the big next thing. It's like, if you think about two major kind of 10Xs, right? Like, and what's the major things coming through? One is content generation. Like today we are sitting here talking in person, generating this content for this, right? Tomorrow I'm just going to type, hey, have Mitesh and Bruce talk intelligently around AI, and it can generate a podcast. Now, it won't be good. It won't be robust. It won't replace this. I don't know for how long, but it'll take some time, right? So content generation is one of the big things that's going to drive that adoption 10x, because if you think about it today,
but what you're inferring is it's coming.
It's coming, absolutely. And then the other part is robotics. You think about all of the physical things that we do by walking and moving and things like those, which automatically translates into different types of workloads that we do. That's all going to come. And like, look, there's always positives and negatives. So we will have to think and learn and adjust around this new reality. But this is the part of the demand curve that we see and that we're building Positron for. Like, that's the inherent optimism. If you ask me,
yeah,
as a technologist, that's the inherent optimism, that there's just so much demand curve that is coming in our faces that you got to build to make it better. And if you build it, you know, you will kind of ride that wave. If you fight against it, then neither are you going to help with the problems that will come with it, and you're going to be left behind. So you better build it.
Guesstimate for me how much money is being spent on research and development of these particular products. It can't be cheap.
No. I mean, I don't even need to guesstimate, right? I mean, we have the numbers in the industry that we're saying.
I mean,
you just look at the number that people hear is their NVIDIA revenue number, and they're on a $200 billion ARR, annualized revenue revenue run rate track. That's just one company. Now, that's just NVIDIA that goes into a data center. To build a data center today for 1 megawatt of energy, that's $15 million. You're hearing projects that are 1 gigawatt, which is 1,000 megawatts. So these are $1.5 billion expenditures that are going on a per data center. How many data centers are being built up in the United States alone for a gigawatt? Well into tens of hundreds. So we're talking about hundreds of billions of dollars just to build core and shell to pump power through.
I was going to say, is there enough energy in the country, in the world, to supply this demand?
I think
I've been reading articles about that.
Yeah, I think it's a very interesting topic right now. I think it's a function of increasing energy as increasing demand comes through. I think so far we have the energy. That's why we have been able to, you know, get the growth that we have been, and people are building more and more of it. And it's not just that, hey, you have alternative sources of energy or nothing or anything like that. It's building what we currently obviously have, whether that's, you know, grid power and then keeping on developing that, but then also coming up with new power generation solutions. In Nevada, for example, geothermal is taking off. There's solar, obviously. Nuclear is back in kind of fashion, right? You know, the government is talking about it. Yeah, like if you say that, hey, do we have enough energy for demand curve that's going to be 3 years later? If we stay flat, no. The answer is no. Like if you think about United States and the power increase, we used to increase power production by anywhere from 2 to 5% year on year. Over the last 2 years, we have been touching almost 10% power increase production year on year.
You know, Mitesh, you know, when you're talking about being a long-term investor, I understand it if you're like a Procter & Gamble or if you're consumer non-durable, things like that, where people are constantly consuming things and the predictability of those earnings are fairly high.
Yeah.
Value stocks, whatever you might call it. And I would have said to you 6 months ago, you're 100% right. You know, artificial intelligence, NVIDIA, there seemed to be a cadence with it. The Magnificent Seven.
Yep.
And then out of nowhere, DeepSeek comes.
Yeah.
And I would like you to educate me a little bit on DeepSeek, because I have to tell you, it made me go from a long-term investor thinking on NVIDIA like it was, you know, kind of a Star Wars type thing. It was going to last forever, to showing some vulnerabilities in their model and the concept. And there had been some skepticism there. And so maybe you could shed some light there from an engineering perspective.
Yeah.
I'm like, how could you do that so cheaply
with
such little resources? I mean, educate me a little bit on that.
Yeah, by the way, that's the same answer I give when people ask me about positron, right?
Yeah, that's why I'm kind of making the correlation.
Yeah, I think it's like, hey, how can you achieve such level of efficiencies with a 20 to 30 people team with you know...
Because it seems implausible.
Yeah. It does, but I think like there have been many examples in the history of the world about it. But specifically talking about DeepSeek and then you asking around it from a market perspective, look, obviously what it showed was that you could get an amazing model competing with OpenAI, which is the premier closed source model company in the world. Closed source as in they don't share their model out to the world, they just share the application of it to the world, right? But showing to the world that you can do it with a lot less resources. It's just ingenuity, right? Like, you know, they basically R&D'd their way into figuring out how to run things that can really drive efficiencies. Like they use something called reinforcement learning, which makes the model learn, self-learn really, really well. And you don't need to spend as much. They figured out reasoning, which means that you give model enough time to think, it can generate very intelligent answers. The more time you think, more intelligent than answer it generates, things like this. So they not only invented, or like not invented, I guess discovered, like they did an R&D of it for a lot cheaper. But then what they did is they open sourced it so that everyone like you and me and any other company in technology world can have access to it. And that was the impact on the market. It was not the fact just that DeepSeek was able to do it. There'd have been someone else who would have done it anyways. But the point is that they open sourced it now that it has access to everyone. What it does, it creates, we talked about the concept of air pockets. It creates a concept of short-term air pocket because you think about people thinking that, hey, if to run this type of intelligent model, you will need to spend this much. And suddenly they brought it down by a magnitude, right? So now you now have to wait on the demand curve to rise again to get to that spend curve. Now, we all believe that demand curve will rise to account for that. In fact, by making it cheaper, you make it more accessible.
Correct.
And you make it more available to everyone. This is the fundamental theory behind positron too. You make intelligence cheaper such that more of it is deployed, more of it is used, and then you drive more adoption of it. So that's kind of what happens.
You know, Mitesh, I could talk to you forever about positron. This is a new company. It's very exciting. The reason why I did talk about DeepSeek a little bit is positron does remind me of the of the disruptor in the space. So, I'm excited to see the launch of it and read more about it. But your history is also pretty interesting. Mitesh, you didn't just show up as the CEO. You know, give me a little history on who you are. And because when I met you a while back, a few years ago, I found it fascinating that you've gone through several experiences through college and then, you know, through Lambda. I don't want to steal your thunder, but kind of give me your journey a little bit.
Yeah, I think
and why you're here, you know what I mean,
as
the CEO. I mean,
I think like, look, the why is actually always about curiosity and wanting to learn more. There's all the other reasons that go into picking careers and making choices, but fundamentally, I think it's about you're seeing a technology, you want to be involved in it, and you want to contribute it to make it better. And it's a cliche to make it better for humanity. Like, obviously, it's a collective responsibility of all of us. But the point there is just like you really want to learn, and that really drives it. And that kind of that answer also takes you into my own personal background and kind of how I think about the world, right? Like, I came here as a 17-year-old to go to and study. I was going to research, be a researcher in the field of biology and chemistry. Like, I was a chemical engineer, and my first startup was in chemical engineering. I worked on designing, water purification, water generation and purification through air, through the humidity in air using salt solution. So no electricity. It was a baby of mine, right, to build that. But through that, I also learned about failure, right? You know, the technology, it worked at small scale. It failed at big scale. You know, and I learned about, you know, how to deal with failure.
And that's often the problem with entrepreneurs, is that they kind of become so aspirational, as you were saying, you want to better the world and so on and so forth. But then when it comes to the reality of revenue, I mean, that had to be a big growing curve for you.
Big growing curve. And everyone has to realize that you have to drive real value, because you can speak in hyperboles all day long, but if you don't drive real value, you're not going to be a long-term success, or whether it's success or you're not going to have long-term even kind of satisfaction, right? So this kind of bleeds into Lambda. You know, when we started Lambda and really started working.
Lambda?
Yes, Lambda is providing compute for AI, right? Like, you know, we build clouds. Like, if you've heard of AWS or GCP, which is Google Cloud or Amazon Cloud, it's exactly that, but specifically targeted for AI applications, right? And when we... with Steven, when we started building it, you know, Steven, Michael, myself, we knew that we had to generate real revenue. You talked about revenue from a company perspective, that's as real as it can get. We got Lambda to generating close to $500 million of ARR in the past year and so on. And we went from the journey from zero to that, right, from 2017 onward. So that's kind of what my background is.
You're going to be launching this product soon, so I cannot wait to read about it and so on and so forth. And hear about, you know, your success. I just want to thank you for being here. I could talk to you for hours. The reality of the matter is there's so many derivatives of the things that you're talking about.
Yep.
Just to hit the surface really doesn't do it justice. But Mitesh, I wanted to thank you very much for coming here to beautiful Las Vegas.
Yeah.
And wish you much success.
Thank you so much, Bruce, for having me. It's been, as I said, we can talk about it for hours and days. So looking forward to that too.
But all right, man.
Pleasure, man.
All right.
Thank you.
Changing the game, shattering expectations, rewriting the rules. Meet the new visionaries. The rebels, the ones who dare to disrupt. Exploring the industries revolutionizing our world. The Disruptors. From the Fountain Blue Las Vegas Resort.